This podcast details true crime cases. It contains adult themes and may contain descriptions of violence. This episode contains explicit language. It is not intended for children. Listener discretion is advised.
Thank you for joining me for today's episode of Once Upon a Crime. We're in the series Manipulated to Murder. This month, I'm sharing stories about people who were coerced into participating in murder. In this episode, I'll share a case that became a media sensation when it hit the news cycle in 1990. It was such a high-profile case that millions watched the trial unfold live on television. It was the very first time a murder trial in the U.S. received gavel-to-gavel coverage on a newly launched cable television channel dedicated to true crime content, Court TV. Pamela Smart became a household name, not for being the next Barbara Walters, as she'd hoped for, but for orchestrating the cold-blooded murder of her husband, using her teenage lover as the trigger man. This is chapter 2 in the series, Manipulated to Murder, the case of Pamela Smart. Billy Flynn couldn't believe his luck. The cute 22-year-old blonde with the killer figure wanted him. Him. Sure, he'd had girlfriends before, but that's all they were, friends. Well, it was nothing to be ashamed of. After all, he was only 15 years old. Or as Billy would say, 15 going on 16. But Pam Smart was way out of his league. Not only was she a 22-year-old woman, not a girl, but also smart, funny, and pretty damn cool. In addition, she was kind of like his teacher. No, she wasn't a school teacher. Pam Smart was employed by the local school district as a media coordinator. She also volunteered as an educator for a drug prevention program that all Winnicunnet High School students were required to attend. That's where Billy had met Pam. Of course, he'd taken notice of her right away, in the way teenage boys noticed women. Pam Smart dressed young and in a style he liked, kind of like a rocker chick. Short skirts, leather jackets, big teased hair, and high heels or boots. She looked like the women he drooled over in Motley Crue videos, his favorite band. Billy also sported a rocker look, with long hair and usually wearing a black leather jacket, paired with a rotation of t-shirts depicting his favorite rock bands. What Billy didn't know was that he was just Pam's type. She'd noticed him, too. She liked the sly glances he threw her way, and the way his eyes followed her around the room when he thought she wasn't looking. She lapped up the attention from him and began calling on Billy more often. She'd praised the shy teen if he contributed to the group discussion even a little, and encouraged him to say more. Pam didn't think of herself as the group leader, but as a peer. She talked with the teens about her love for rock music and shared her experience as an on-air host for her college radio station. She said she'd called herself the Maiden of Metal and played rock music from her favorite bands like Van Halen. She bragged about meeting the musicians and being given backstage passes to rock concerts. She'd even had the opportunity to meet her favorite rock star, Eddie Van Halen. Pam started asking certain students to help her with special projects, inviting them to her office. One of these students was Billy Flynn. The other was his close friend, Cecilia Pierce. Cecilia was also 16, and like Billy, was from South Seabrook, a working-class town. She had blonde hair and blue eyes, and was somewhat introverted. She'd known Billy Flynn since he moved to Seabrook and began attending Seabrook Middle School when they were 13. Along with two boys named J.R. and Pete, the four became a close-knit group that continued into high school. Billy Flynn was born in 1974 in California. His parents, Bill and Elaine Flynn, divorced when Billy was 12. He was the oldest of three boys. Billy and his brothers grew up in a tension-filled home. His parents didn't get along, and his father was short-tempered with his sons. Not long after his parents split up, Billy's father died in a car crash. The accident was so violent that his vehicle burst into flames. Bill Flynn had to be identified through dental records. Elaine Flynn moved with her boys to New Hampshire to make a fresh start. Billy became withdrawn and depressed after his father's death. Moving across the country added to this stress. He was sullen and angered quickly. Billy spent time playing his guitar and hanging out with his small group of friends. He was not outgoing and was described as somewhat quiet and shy. When Pam singled out Billy and Cecilia for special attention, they both quickly became her biggest fans. They hung on her every word and craved her approval and friendship. Pam offered them rides home after group meetings in her Honda CRX. It was a sporty car with a vanity license plate that read Halen in honor of her favorite rock group and musician. She, Billy, and Cecilia blasted their favorite tunes from her new car stereo speakers during their drives. She asked Cecilia to be her student intern, and the teen was honored to have been chosen. Cecilia didn't run with the popular crowd, and Pam Smart was smart, funny, pretty, and had been a popular cheerleader in high school. Cecilia felt proud when Pam started referring to her as her best friend. Pam, Billy, and Cecilia spent a lot of time together outside of school. She took them out to lunch, to the mall, on trips to the beach, and even to dance clubs in the city. More frequently, Pam had Cecilia run errands for her or work on some project, while she met alone with Billy in her office. She'd later say Billy was easy to talk to, and they had a lot in common. In February of 1990, Pam dropped Cecilia off first one evening and then drove Billy home. They were alone in the car, and night had fallen. Pam shut off the engine and turned to the teen. Looking at him, she said she had a question. "Do you ever think of me when we're apart?" she asked. Billy stammered out, "Sure," and then admitted he did. "All the time." Pam confessed, "Well, I think of you all the time, too." She reached out and touched his hand, smiled at him, and said, "I'll see you tomorrow." Stunned and happy, Billy couldn't stop thinking about Pam and wondered what came next. Pam Smart was born Pamela Ann Woyas in Miami, Florida in 1967. She was the second of three children. Her sister Elizabeth was 6 years older, and brother John 3 years younger. Her father, John Sr., an airline pilot, and her mother Linda, a part-time legal secretary, moved the family to Windham, New Hampshire when Pam was in elementary school. She later attended Pinkerton Academy, a private high school in Derry, graduating with honors in 1985. Pam was a highly motivated person driven to perfection. She had a compulsive need to be in control of her environment and liked things organized just so. She placed her clothes in color-coded groups and even folded her dirty laundry before placing it in the hamper. She was meticulous about her schedule and became upset if she had to alter it. She was also very bright, creative, and serious about her studies. Pam had ambitions to work in journalism or broadcasting. She wanted what she believed would be a successful career on television to begin as soon as possible. So intent was she on this goal that Pam graduated from Florida State University with a degree in communications in just 3 years. She'd later admit that she'd been so focused on academics in college that she rarely dated. Her passion for rock music had her spending her free time working at the FSU college radio station. Her one-night-a-week radio program was called Metal Madness. Pam, aka the Maiden of Metal, spun records for listeners, announced rock concerts, and gave out tickets to listeners who were lucky enough to be the fifth, seventh, or ninth caller. "I was the girl with all the hookups," she'd later say. On December 31, 1986, Pam met Greg Smart at a New Year's Eve party. Greg was from New Hampshire and was instantly attracted to the petite 19-year-old blonde. Greg, 21, was born on September 4, 1965. His parents, Bill and Judy Smart, raised Greg and two more sons, Ricky and Dean, in Nashua, New Hampshire. Greg was fit and athletic and enjoyed outdoor sports like hiking, fishing, and skiing. He played a little guitar and wore his hair long in the style of the mid-1980s big hair band days. It was these last two things that first attracted Pam to Greg. Greg and Pam's romance started long distance. By February 1987, it became clear that they both wanted to pursue a serious relationship. Greg moved to Florida while Pam finished her degree. In 1989, Pam and Greg married and moved to New Hampshire. But before long, there were cracks in the relationship. Greg's father, Bill, provided a good lifestyle for his family as a sales representative with Metropolitan Life Insurance Company. Greg, now married and hoping to start a family of his own, decided to follow in his father's footsteps and joined the firm as a junior sales rep. He cut off his long hair and traded in his jeans and t-shirts for suits and ties. Pam was not happy about this change. In fact, she was devastated. She wanted to keep her youthful image and fancied herself and her new husband as a cool couple who rejected a certain image. Now she complained that her guitar-playing rock and roll husband had turned into a typical New Hampshire yuppie. Greg laughed off her concerns, saying he needed to appear more conservative to sell insurance policies to the public, but he was still the same guy inside. He loved his wife and wanted to make her happy, and he knew that Pam also loved to have the things that a successful sales career could buy. They'd moved into a new condominium complex on Misty Morning Drive in Derry. Pamela decorated it tastefully, using money gifted to them as wedding gifts, and with the help of their parents. She liked things just so, and the condo was furnished with white furniture and carpeting. Pam kept everything spotless and was very proud of her home. Besides her car and her home, Pam's pride and joy was a Shih Tzu puppy Greg had given her. She named the puppy Halen for reasons that by now should be clear. She spoiled the dog with treats and attention. Pam sent out her resume hoping to jumpstart a career in television broadcasting, but grew frustrated when she wasn't immediately hired as an on-air reporter. Greg told her to be patient, but Pam, used to excelling at everything she tried, became bitter. As her stress level increased, so did squabbles and arguments between her and Greg. They fought about money and all the little adjustments newlywed couples must make. Pam was inflexible in her expectations that Greg follow her lead, in keeping the home up to her standards, caring for her beloved dog, and not skimping on the niceties. A state-of-the-art stereo system, for example. Greg preferred to budget more conservatively until they built up their income, and he pushed back on some unnecessary expenses. He also wanted to begin saving to have children. Pam wasn't in a hurry to start a family. She wanted to focus on her career first. Greg began spending more time away from home, working late into the evenings or sometimes meeting up with friends after he'd finished his sales calls. At the same time, Pam started spending more time hanging out with teens Billy Flynn and Cecilia Pierce. Cecilia would later report hearing arguments between Pam and Greg. She'd heard Pam on the phone on several occasions, heatedly discussing their finances and other issues. Pam mentioned divorce more than once and argued with her husband about who would be entitled to the dog and the furniture if the marriage ended. Greg Smart engaged in a one-night stand with another woman just months into the marriage. He'd confessed the affair to Pam, saying it was a mistake he deeply regretted and promising it would never happen again. The marriage, already on shaky grounds, was threatened to be destroyed completely. Even so, the couple made plans for a trip to Florida to celebrate their upcoming first anniversary. Greg told his family that Pam was excited about the trip. She loved to lie out on the beach. Was the affair the reason Pam began seeking the attention of 15-year-old Billy Flynn? Was she trying to take revenge on her husband by having an affair also? If so, why did she choose an underage child instead of a man? Or was there some other reason she chose an impressionable teen who could be easily seduced and exploited? Pam Smart would later admit that she'd always liked a lot of attention. She wanted to be popular and admired. A television career would have met this need, but she'd not been successful in that endeavor. The easy admiration she received from Billy, Cecilia, and other teens at Winnicunnett High may have been a pale substitute for television fame. But like anything Pam Smart did, she jumped into the role feet first. In late March 1990, while her husband was away on a business trip, Pam invited Billy and Cecilia to her home to watch movies. Leaving Cecilia downstairs, she invited Billy up to her bedroom to have sex. Up until that time, They'd just made out a couple of times. Billy, who later said this was his first sexual experience, was instantly hooked on Pam. She'd waited until he turned 16 to seduce him, and now he was completely besotted with the 22-year-old. They continued to meet over the next few weeks, but each time, Pam would tell him that it was the last time. "We have to stop. I'm married," she'd lament. Billy begged her not to end the relationship and urged her to leave Greg so they could be together. Soon after they began sleeping together, Pam told Billy that her husband was abusing her. She claimed he'd hit her and threatened to take everything, including her beloved dog Halen, if she ever tried to leave him. Billy was cycling through a roller coaster of emotions. He was on cloud 9 when he and Pam met for their secret sexual rendezvous. She'd tell him she loved him and couldn't live without him. But his world came crashing down again when she told him she had to end things with him, saying there was no hope of them staying together because of Greg. One day, Pam told Billy there was only one way they could continue to see each other, but she needed his help. He said he'd do anything for her. She told him he needed to get rid of her husband. Hey guys, this is Esther, host of Once Upon a Crime. I've got an exciting opportunity that I'm so psyched to share with you. How would you like to travel the world with me? My second love after true crime is seeing the world. Now, I've been given the opportunity to host trips to destinations around the world and bring you, my listeners and friends of the show, along with me. But I need your help. I need your input to plan these trips. Where would you like to go? What kind of activities would you like to enjoy? Would you like to visit a city like New York, London, or Mexico City and check out the local entertainment, culture, and nightlife? Or would you prefer a tropical getaway like Bali or the Caribbean for laid-back sightseeing and beach days? Or anything in between? How about crossing off that trip to Turkey or Indonesia or Italy off your bucket list? Click on the link in the show notes to complete a short 2-minute survey and tell me what kind of travel you're most interested in. And I'll keep you informed about upcoming trips as soon as they're confirmed. We'll plan trips around your interests and budget, and we'll travel together as a small group. There's safety in numbers too, so single men and women are encouraged. Or bring your significant other or best friends along. Either way, it will be a blast. Click on the survey link right away. The sooner we get your responses, the sooner we'll be on the road together to new adventures. Thank you so much, and I can't wait to travel with you. Can you believe we are just a few short weeks away from CrimeCon 2024? Well, I can't wait to meet you all in Nashville from May 31st to June 2nd for the world's best true crime event. CrimeCon is an immersive weekend-long experience that takes you front row to hear about the latest investigations and teachings about cutting-edge scientific techniques. You'll also get sneak peeks into the hottest binge-worthy true crime shows and documentaries and rub elbows with celebrities in the true crime world. If you're a follower of true crime, you will not want to miss it. Mark your calendars for May 31st to June 2nd and secure your tickets today. Bring along your best partners in true crime and make sure to come and meet me on Podcast Row in Nashville at CrimeCon 2024. Grab your discount using my promo code ONCE. It really helps out the show and gives you a 10% savings off your standard badge for CrimeCon. A win-win. I can't wait to see you. Go to crimecon.com for tickets and information, or to our website, truecrimepodcast.com, and click on upcoming events, and I'll see you there. Pam Smart was urging her 16-year-old lover to kill her husband, Greg. It was the only way they could be together, she said. When he hesitated and encouraged her to just divorce him, she grew angry. "He'll take everything. He'll harass us. No, it's the only way," she insisted. Finally, she said, "If you loved me, you'd do this." Pam told him it was over. Desperate to hold on to her, Billy agreed to the murder plot. But when she began making concrete plans to carry it out, he got cold feet and couldn't go through with it. The second time he backed out, Pam was furious. She said he didn't love her and it was over. She stopped speaking to him and refused to see him. "That's when I started getting serious about it," Billy later admitted. because I thought, she's going to leave me, and that's going to be it. So I started talking to JR and Pete about it. Billy needed his friend's help. By now, along with Cecilia, JR and Pete knew about his relationship with Pam. When he told them she'd requested his help to murder her husband, they told him he was crazy and she was just using him. But Billy had fallen hard for Pam and wouldn't be swayed from being with her. When JR and Pete realized there was nothing they could do to talk him out of it, they agreed to help. JR's real name was Vince Latime Jr. He and Billy had been best friends since they were 12. JR was an intelligent kid who loved to read and wore thick glasses. He was also a thoughtful boy who enjoyed visiting his grandmother when he had free time and volunteered at his church. He planned to join the Marines after graduation. Patrick Pete Randall, also 16, made up the trio. The three teens were so close that some called them the Three Musketeers. Pete was short and athletic, and also described as intelligent. Of the three, he was the only one who'd been in trouble before. He had a history of being truant from school. Pam told Billy that May 1st would be the perfect time to do the deed. Greg had late sales appointments that night and would be home after dark. She'd be out of the house until after 9 p.m. to attend a school board meeting. She explained the plan to the boys. She'd leave a door to the condo unlocked so they could get inside and ambush Greg once he returned home. They should ransack the place to make it look like a burglary gone wrong. She'd said they could take some things that she'd leave out, jewelry and some electronics. Pam had a few rules. She told them not to turn on any lights. She said her husband was, quote, a wimp, and if he saw lights on, he'd be spooked and wouldn't go inside. She also told them not to hurt her dog. She instructed them to put Halen in the basement before they committed the murder. She didn't want the puppy traumatized. Billy was to use a gun to kill her husband. A knife was too messy, and she didn't want her carpet and furniture ruined. JR was the only one with access to a weapon. His father owned a .38 caliber revolver that he said he could sneak out of the house. However, he didn't want to be involved in the killing. Pete agreed to accompany Billy inside the house, while JR was to wait down the road in a getaway car, his grandmother's car. The night before the planned murder, Pam met with the boys for one last briefing. She told them to dress in dark clothing and said Billy should tie his hair back. She promised to pay them $1,000 each from the $140,000 life insurance policy she had on Greg's life. Finally, as the meeting broke up, she asked the boys for their advice on how she should act when she called 911. They told her, just act natural. On May 1st, 1990, Pam Smart met Billy Flynn briefly at the high school to let him know she'd left the back door and bulkhead door to the cellar open so they could get into the condo. That morning, she'd left home wearing all of her good jewelry. She'd left out some pieces of costume jewelry, a detail that didn't escape Pete's notice when the boys entered the house that evening. The boys picked up JR's grandmother's car. Another teen named Raymond Fowler had also been let in on the plot and agreed to come along and wait with JR in a nearby shopping center parking lot. JR handed the .38 he'd taken from his dad's closet to Billy Flynn. The boys parked in the shopping center lot, and Billy and Pete walked the short distance to the condo on Misty Morning Drive. They arrived just before 8:30 p.m. After putting the dog in the basement, they began rifling through drawers and cabinets, taking a few small items, including the inexpensive jewelry Pam had left out, to make it look like a burglary. They took two stereo speakers off their stands in the living room, but later, in their haste to leave, forgot them by the back door. Then they waited for Greg to return home. Billy waited behind the front door with the gun. Pete positioned himself on the staircase just beyond the door, holding a butcher knife he'd taken from the Smart's kitchen. They discussed hitting Greg with a heavy brass candlestick they found in the house to incapacitate him first, but discarded this idea, dropping it on the floor in the entryway. Just before 9 p.m., they heard Greg's key in the front door lock. He opened the door to the dark house and called out for the dog. Billy leaped out from behind the door and placed the gun to his head. Pete moved quickly towards Greg and placed the knife to his throat. Greg was wrestled to the ground. He asked what they wanted, and at some point, he took out his wallet and offered it to them. "Take whatever you want," he pleaded. When the boys demanded his wedding ring also, Greg refused. "My wife would kill me," he cried. Billy, holding the gun to the back of Greg Smart's head, hesitated. Finally, he said aloud, "God forgive me," and pulled the trigger. Smart crumpled to the ground and died instantly. Billy and Pete ran out of the house, taking with them a pillowcase filled with CDs and costume jewelry. They returned to the car where JR and Raymond Fowler were waiting and drove back to Seabrook. A short time later, Pam left the school board meeting and returned home. She opened the door and saw her husband lying in a pool of blood in the entryway. Without entering or touching him, she ran out into the street, screaming for help. It was 6 days before her first wedding anniversary. Detective Dano Pelletier with the Derry Police Department was the lead investigator on Gregory Smart's murder case. Red flags went off for him almost immediately. From day one, the detective said, Pam Smart wasn't acting the grieving widow. He thought the burglary looked staged. Well-trained and experienced investigators can spot telltale signs of a real burglary versus a staged one, he explained. This one smelled fishy. It's rare for burglars to bring a gun to commit the crime, and more rare still to commit murder, especially execution style, as Greg Smart had been killed. But the biggest tell for the detective was Pam Smart's demeanor. Rather than appearing distraught or even in shock after discovering her husband of less than a year murdered in their home, she was completely cool and collected. Pam Smart insisted on being interviewed by police right away. Normally, they'd give her some time to get over the shock of the crime before questioning her, but Pam contacted them and came in the next day for an interview. Detective Pelletier noticed that Pam Smart never lost her composure and didn't mention her husband by name during the interview. She didn't even say, "my husband," but instead described seeing the body, which he found odd. When he asked what she'd observed when she'd first entered the condo, she immediately said, "It appeared to be a botched burglary. I noticed the stereo speakers were taken off their stand." He was surprised that she hadn't described seeing her husband lying in a pool of blood as the first thing she saw. Another red flag. The only time Pam seemed upset was when she asked about her dog. She hadn't been allowed to enter the house, and police officers had retrieved the dog and taken it for safekeeping. She'd had yet to be reunited with Halen, which seemed to anger her to the point of tears, the first he'd seen the widow shed. A couple of days later, the detective and an officer took her to the condo, which was still an active crime scene, and allowed her inside to retrieve some clothing and personal items. Her mother Linda accompanied her. They observed that without any hesitation, Pam walked over the blood-soaked area where her husband had been shot, not once but several times as she loaded things into her car. Finally, her mother placed a towel over the bloodstain. Pam continued to walk on it without a second glance. Everyone else, including the officers, had carefully stepped around it. Still, Pam Smart had an airtight alibi for the time Greg Smart was killed. She was present and accounted for at the school board meeting. The investigation into the murder continued. 2 weeks later, they got their first break in the case. On May 14th, an anonymous tip came in from a female who said she heard Cecilia Pierce claim that Pam Smart planned her husband's murder with three teen boys. They questioned Pierce, but she denied knowing anything. Still, they kept track of her movements and began inquiring into her relationship with Pam Smart. Gossip was circulating at the high school about Greg Smart's murder and the relationship between his widow and their classmate, Billy Flynn. As is often the case in high schools, students tend to share information freely, and teens aren't the best at keeping secrets. If there's juicy gossip to be shared, you can best believe it will spread like wildfire in a high school setting. On June 10th, Vance Latime Sr., JR's father, brought a .38-caliber snub-nosed revolver to the Seabrook Police Department. He told police he suspected it may have been used in the murder. When one officer mentioned Pam Smart's name, Latime recognized it as someone his son and his friends had talked about. Seabrook police contacted Derry detectives, who brought Latime in for an interview. When he arrived, he brought along another teen named Ralph Welch. Welch was a friend of his son J.R., who was living with the Latimes. Welch had a turbulent home life, and J.R.'s parents offered to take him in so he could focus on his studies. Welch was closer to Billy Flynn and Pete Randall than he was with J.R. Welch now told investigators what he'd shared with Mr. Latime. He said he overheard J.R. and Pete discussing their involvement in Greg Smart's murder. He also said they'd mentioned Billy Flynn and Raymond Fowler as having participated. The same day that Welch was being interviewed, Pete Randall, J.R., and Billy Flynn traveled to Seabrook to try and retrieve the gun and dispose of it. They were unsuccessful since Mr. Latime had already handed it over to the police. The next morning, all three teens were arrested. Later that day, investigators returned to question Cecilia Pierce. By this time, she'd learned the boys had been arrested and heard a rumor that a fourth person, a teen girl, who had knowledge of the murder, was next. Scared now, Cecilia agreed to cooperate with investigators. She told them that almost every day, beginning around May 1st, Pam Smart shared details with her about her plan to have Billy Flynn murder her husband. Cecilia filled them in about the relationship between Billy and Pam. Pam had also confided to Cecilia that she wanted out of her marriage. Cecilia hadn't believed she and Billy would actually commit the murder and was shocked when she heard Greg Smart was dead. But investigators needed more than her word to charge Pam Smart with being an accomplice to first-degree murder. They debated using the 16-year-old to help them get evidence against Smart, but ultimately decided to wire her and record her conversations with Pam. Cecilia and Pam met over 2 days in July. Police were listening in and recording the conversations. They'd coached the teen on questions to pose to Smart, hoping she'd slip up and admit her part in the murder plot. During the recorded conversations, Pam appears to be urging Cecilia to lie to the police. She says if Cecilia talks, she'll be charged with accessory to murder, adding, quote, "What good is it going to do if you send me to the fucking slammer?" Cecilia asks her, quote, "After everything that's happened, don't you wish you just divorced him?" Pam answers, "Well, I don't know. Nothing was going wrong until they fucking told Ralph," blaming Ralph Welch for coming forward. She then blames the boys for talking to Ralph, saying, "It's all their stupid ass faults." Pam reminds Cecilia she never paid the boys, and the cops aren't going to believe their word over hers anyway. Bragging that she has the, quote, "best friggin' lawyers anywhere," Smart says they're not going to believe JR over her, calling him a 16-year-old in the slammer facing life. "Who are they going to believe?" she scoffs. "Me with a professional reputation? They're going to believe me." Cecilia then asks, "You didn't offer to pay him, right?" And Pam answers, "No." Then Cecilia says, "So he's not going to say that you offered to pay him. He's going to say you knew about it before it happened, which is the truth." Pam answers, "Right." Then she says she'll just deny it and reiterates that the police will believe her over JR. "Anyway," she says, "the worst that will happen to the boys is that they'll serve a couple of years and be out of prison at age 18. On August 1, 1990, Detective Pelletier arrived at Pam Smart's office, taking her by surprise. "What's up?" she asked him. "Well, Pam," Pelletier said, "I have some good news and I have some bad news. The good news is that we've solved the murder of your husband. The bad news is you're under arrest." Pamela Smart was charged as an accomplice to first-degree murder. Before her trial began on March 1, 1991, Billy Flynn and Pete Randall pleaded guilty to second-degree murder, and J.R. Latime pleaded guilty to being an accomplice to second-degree murder. Raymond Fowler, who waited in the car, entered a guilty plea for conspiracy to murder and attempted burglary. They all agreed to testify against Pam Smart. Once details of the murder plot hit the news cycle, it became a media sensation. Pam Smart was erroneously described as a teacher. Newspaper reports detailed a sordid tale of how Smart seduced a student and manipulated him into killing her husband. The headline, "Hot for Teacher," the title of a top 10 hit by rock group Van Halen, often accompanied mugshots of Pam Smart and Billy Flynn. Smart's trial was the first in the U.S. to allow television cameras into the courtroom, Gavel to Gavel coverage was aired on Court TV, a newly launched cable channel dedicated to true crime news and programming. Millions of people watched the trial unfold in real time. Prosecutors described Pamela Smart as a manipulative woman intent on having her husband killed for financial gain. They told the jury she wished to avoid an expensive divorce and was also motivated to collect a $140,000 insurance policy. Smart had seduced a teenager and manipulated him to do her dirty work by threatening to withhold sex, they claimed. They said she had also coerced him by convincing Billy Flynn that Greg Smart was physically abusing her. Her co-conspirators and former best friend, Cecilia Pierce, testified against her. Flynn and Randall admitted to murdering Greg Smart at Pam Smart's direction. The defense put the murder squarely on the shoulders of Billy Flynn, painting him as a lovesick teen who wanted Pamela Smart for himself. Millions of people watched as the defendant took the stand in her own defense. She admitted to, quote, making the mistake of having an affair, but denied she'd taken any part in her husband's murder. She claimed she'd broken off things with Flynn and told him she was going to repair her marriage. Flynn had taken it upon himself to murder the man he considered to be his romantic rival, the defense claimed. The trial ended after 14 days of testimony. Pamela Smart was found guilty of being an accomplice to first-degree murder, conspiracy to commit murder, and witness tampering. The audio recording of her conversations with Cecilia Pierce convinced the jury of her guilt. Under New Hampshire law, the additional charge of being an accomplice to murder carried a mandatory sentence of life in prison. Smart was sentenced to life without the possibility of parole. In 1992, Billy Flynn was sentenced to life in prison for second-degree murder. He would be eligible for parole in 40 years, less if he maintained good behavior in prison. While behind bars, he earned a general equivalency diploma, was active in charity work, and worked as a prison electrician. He applied for a sentence reduction in 2007, but was denied. At that time, he issued an apology to Greg Smart's family, who had opposed his early release. He took full responsibility for the murder, but also stated it would never have happened without Pam Smart's insistence. He earned early release due to good behavior. He was granted parole in March 2015 and was released in June after serving 25 years. He was 41 at the time of his release. Patrick Pete Randall was also sentenced to life in prison, with eligibility for parole in 40 years, with 12 years deferred. In 2009, the judge reduced his minimum sentence to 25 years, and he was also granted parole in 2015. Both Billy Flynn and Pete Randall are sentenced to lifetime parole. Vance J.R. Latime Jr. was sentenced to life in prison as an accomplice to second-degree murder and was eligible for parole after 30 years, with 12 years suspended. In 2005, his minimum sentence was reduced, and he was paroled that same year after serving 15 years. Raymond Fowler, who'd gone along for the ride on the night of the murder, was paroled in 2003 after serving 13 years. Pamela Smart remains incarcerated. In 1993, she was transferred out of state to Bedford Hills Correctional Facility for Women in New York. A prison official stated that she was transferred due to disciplinary problems, but didn't provide details. In 1996, Smart was physically assaulted by two inmates who claimed she was a snitch. She suffered a broken nose and eye socket. The inmates were convicted of second-degree assault and transferred to other prisons. In 2003, racy photos of Smart in prison were published by the tabloid newspaper, The National Enquirer. The following year, Smart and another inmate at Bedford Hills sued the prison, claiming sexual harassment and sexual assault by a corrections officer, who Smart said had forced her to pose for the photos, which he then sold to the tabloid. She was ultimately awarded $23,000 from the state of New York. While behind bars, Smart has earned two college degrees, a master's in English literature and a master of science in law. She is now working towards a doctorate in ministry. In 2010, she appeared via video link to tell her side of the story on the Oprah Winfrey Show. She continues to assert that she did not conspire to kill her husband. She lost her final appeal in 2023 and faces the rest of her life behind bars. She since stated that she'd have preferred to receive the death penalty rather than, quote, dying in prison of old age. Billy Flynn married in 2015. Pam Smart is bitter about the fact that Flynn, quote, never told the truth, He is the only one who could clear her name and give her a chance for release, she says. She also resents the fact that she's the only one still serving time of the five accused. They're probably at the beach right now, living the high life, Smart says. Pam Smart admits that for many years, she blamed everyone else for Greg's death. Now she concedes, quote, I do feel responsible for my husband's death. When I think about it, I say that all of this is my fault. Had I not made that initial horrible decision to have an affair, nothing would have happened. Pamela Smart is now 57. That will do it for this episode of Once Upon a Crime. Join me again next week for another episode of the series, Manipulated to Murder. Would you like the opportunity to travel with me and a group of other true crime fans? Click on the link in the show notes to take an 8-question survey about your travel preferences. I'll be hosting trips soon, and I'd love to have you come along. Grab the link in the show notes and help me out by telling me what kind of travel you're most interested in so I can start planning our first adventure. Thanks so much. CrimeCon in Nashville is coming up fast, and once again, I'm excited to be there to meet my listeners. Get tickets to CrimeCon happening this year from May 31st to June 2nd, and visit me on Podcast Row. Don't forget to use my offer code ONCE to score your discount. Get all the information by clicking on the link in the show notes or at our website, truecrimepodcast.com. You can watch episodes of Once Upon a Crime on YouTube. Look for Once Upon a Crime Podcast on YouTube and subscribe, like, and comment. It really helps out the show. Thanks. Once Upon a Crime is written and produced by me, Esther Sanchez Ludlow. My executive producer is Lorena Garcia. Until next time, be good to one another.